welcome to the Rufus Project. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and I'm here to take you on a journey through tech news, game reviews, movie reviews, as well as a good look at things that are happening in our local area and, increasingly, maybe even your local area. Given the phenomenal number of guests we have on this week's podcast, I'm guessing there may be a few listeners out there who have not heard this podcast before. If so, welcome aboard. I'll just give you a bit of a rundown of what you're in for. The Rufus Project is a geek podcast. And when we say geek, we're not just talking techie stuff. Because frankly, geeks cover a very wide range of areas. You have your tech geeks, you have your game geeks, you have your movie geeks, you have your singing geeks, you have your performing geeks. Essentially, if you have a passion or a fascination for a subject, you know what? You might just be a geek. The podcast itself is pretty much divided into three main broad areas. We do start with a bit of tech news and a game review or two. We then move into a section where we look at cult movies, movie reviews, and anything else that might fall under that banner. And finally, we have a section called Local Wildlife, where we look at local events and people and let you know what's going on. It is fairly Brisbane focused because that's where we're based. However, this particular podcast, let's just say we burst the borders quite considerably in that one. It's also not just me rabbiting on all by myself. I am joined as well by Brisbane's King of Retro and King of Cult Movies, Christian Fletcher. You will certainly be hearing from him a bit later on. So what do we have in store with you in this fine, fine podcast? Well, the tech news seems to follow a bit of a theme, given what's been happening lately. This will be followed by a review for Goat Simulator, a very interesting experience. In the movie section, Christian is going to take us for a journey through the good, the bad, and the ugly of Eastern movies, and we'll find out if everything is indeed awesome with the Lego Movie. This will be followed by our first set of guests, and a little section that we like to call Redeeming Features, where we look at infamously bad movies and find out if there are any redeeming features, funnily enough. Our very special guests in the Local Wildlife section do show that when we talk about local wildlife, we're talking about anywhere, any place. Let's just say I'm very excited by the fact that we actually have international guests on this podcast. We then will have a rundown of what's happening around Brisbane, and follow that up with a competition section where we can give you free stuff. See, it is worth listening. There is something in it for you. So sit back, enjoy the show, and no matter what kind of geek you are, you're certainly welcome here. As I mentioned earlier, there is a bit of a theme to the news this week. It really all centres around the fact that Game of Thrones is back on our screen. How is this relevant to the tech news, I hear you ask? Well, because it all centres around the fact that Game of Thrones is the biggest downloaded show around, especially in Australia. I like to refer to it as Hit Torrent, but feel free to ignore that term if you think it's too ridiculous. In an effort to preserve their viewing figures, the latest season of Game of Thrones was locked down by Foxtel, Australia's main cable, well, Australia's only cable TV provider. Previously, it had been available through iTunes and even on QuickFlix, but Foxtel had none of that. They wanted it all to themselves. So, did that work? Of course not. Within hours of the first episode of the new series launching, it was already confirmed that there were at least 500,000 concurrent downloads happening, quite a sizable number of which were already in Australia. So, Foxtel, you failed. But the story doesn't end there. In an effort to combat this scourge of piracy, Australian internet providers are sitting down again for talks with the content industry. Now, last time this happened, it didn't work out too well because the content industry basically said, you do things our way or we won't be doing business with you at all. Unfortunately, the government has already come out and stated that if no agreement can be reached with the talks this time, then they will enforce legislation which is remarkably similar to what the content industry wants the ISPs to do in the first place. Things like graduated response, blocking of websites, and cutting off users' access if they continue to pirate. For some strange reason, I'm not incredibly optimistic about the content industry approaching these talks in good faith if they know that the government is just going to roll over and give them what they want if the ISPs won't do it voluntarily. But of course, the content industry wouldn't abuse its power and restrict stuff unnecessarily for the consumer, would it? That's where our next story comes in. There is a group called the Blender Foundation and the Blender Institute, and they are instrumental in the development of an open source 3D graphics program called Blender. Previous releases using this program include the wonderful animated short films Elephant's Dream and Big Buck Bunny. But it's their third movie, Sintel, released in 2010, that has caused some concern. Despite being crowdfunded via donation, DVD sales, and other sponsorship, besides using all open source software and having everything that was created released under a Creative Commons attribution license, so anyone can use this material, Sony Entertainment had decided very recently that no, Sintel actually violates some of their copyrights, and have gotten this movie, this open source creation, blocked on YouTube. I wish I could say I was surprised about this, but a similar thing has actually happened to this very podcast. You may have noticed the little jaunty tunes I use. Well, they're all used under either a Creative Commons license, or the majority are actually available in the public domain. My original closeout theme, which is from a 1920s recording of the Charleston by Paul Whiteman Orchestra, is well and truly in the open source. I mean, there is no doubt about it. However, my video version of my previous podcasts got blocked because apparently someone does hold the copyright to a public domain song in some countries. A definite part of this problem is that YouTube's Content ID software is very overzealous and does not take into any account anything like fair use or attributed license. But still remember that that Content ID system is backed by rules set by the content holders as to how the material can be used. Sorry to be a bit serious this time around. I promise the next podcast I'll find a lot more fun things to talk about, okay? Excellent. I do, however, have a clever geek of the week. A clever geek of the week relates to someone who has done something very, very stupid, usually on the internet. Sometimes they know better, but other times, I don't know what they're thinking. As an added bonus, the clever geek of the week actually fits in with the rest of the tech news. So after all the massive downloading of Game of Thrones, well, you know what? Foxtel wasn't all that happy with the outcome. So Foxtel's head of corporate affairs, Bruce Meagher, decided to take immediate action and decisive action, and action which I'm sure is going to see a massive result in his favour. He decided to publish an open letter to the pirates on the internet. Now, the entire thing is very entertaining reading, but to just, I suppose, focus on some highlights. He pulled out the old chestnut. Oh, not so much, you know, you wouldn't steal a car. No, no. His comment actually compared downloading and the justifications for downloading Game of Thrones as, "It's like justifying stealing a Ferrari on the basis that the waiting list is too long or the price is too high." I don't know if that's how he talks, but that's how I'm imagining him in my head right now. He also tries to guilt-trip all the pirates out there by saying that by making a digital copy, all the actors, extras, writers, camera crew, makeup artists, editors, special effects teams, and the many others who make Game of Thrones, well, that means that they won't get the money they deserve. if he thinks for a moment that anyone seriously believes that the guys from Game of Thrones haven't already been paid quite generously, and if he expects us to believe that revenue from Foxtel airing Game of Thrones exclusively is going to go to these artists, seriously, what does he think of the people that he's trying to address? Most of these guys are tech-savvy. Most of these guys are fully aware of how the distribution system works. However, he still is going back to the same tired arguments that are done again and again and again. Definitely check out the extra features for this podcast, because I will be putting in a link to a great take on those obnoxious anti-piracy ads by the IT Crowd. One of my favorite videos ever. But you know what? He decided that that still wasn't enough. He then compares Foxtel Go and the fact that you can get a package for $35 a month, which will let you watch Game of Thrones. And it's the best comparison to iTunes and similar services. First up, Foxtel Go lets you watch things that have aired within 7 days. It's a catch-up service only, and you certainly can't, like, re-watch something or save up all the episode for a binge-watch further down the track. Additionally, when you could buy Game of Thrones through iTunes, you'd pay about $35, and that would give you access to the entire season on the spot. A season pass, if you will. However, with this, say, the season goes for 3 months, well, you're going to end up spending a bit more than $35, aren't you? And at the end of it, you're not going to be able to go back to rewatch your favourite bits. Let's just say that reaction to this on the internet is the equivalent of taking the word Foxtel and replacing the O with a U. So to Bruce Meagher, and, well, to Foxtel in general, thinking that by making Game of Thrones a Foxtel exclusive would actually impact piracy instead of increasing it, I hereby announce that you guys are this week's Clever Geeks of the Week. Well, well done. We have a very interesting game to review this week, Goat Simulator by Coffee Stain Studios. I can already hear what a lot of you are thinking. Seriously, Goat Simulator? Well, it's real, it exists, and despite the fact it was released on April the 1st, it's not an April Fool's Day joke. So why Goat Simulator, I hear you ask. This game is interesting in that it shows the real power of the internet and the people on it. Goat Simulator was originally created as an experiment in a game jam. These are where developers have 24 hours to come up with whatever the heck they can come up with, usually according to a theme. It was never the intention of the studio to release this as a retail game. That really came from the fact that the internet demanded it. There was so much positive feedback on what was on offer that, in the end, Coffee Stain Studios did give in and give us a retail product. So what can you do in Goat Simulator? Well, you play as a goat. This may not seem very exciting to begin with, but this game is made with tongue firmly implanted in cheek, or in the case of the goat in the game, tongue lolling around on the ground. He's got a very long tongue, it's very disturbing. As a goat, you can jump and bleat and do all sorts of wonderful things, including headbutting down fences, people, basketballs, other goats, cars, trucks. Pretty much anything in-game is your personal butting board. You also have the option to bite or lick objects or people. And what this does is takes the goat's very long tongue and attach it to whatever you are licking, which you can then drag around. So, for example, at one point I decided to lick a car, and then I wandered around as a goat dragging a car behind me. It was very odd, but it doesn't stop just there. There are trampolines you can bounce on, and you can actually get the goat to do tricks in mid-air, like flips and twists and turns. And still, there's more. As you explore the environment, you come across various situations. For instance, I came across a car doing laps in the middle of a field. Upon licking that, I was then dragged along behind the car, and the goat was ragdolling very disturbingly. There are a few secrets to find. Another interesting find within the game was a jetpack, which the goat could wear, and then you could actually jump and rocket off into the sky with it with very little control of where you were going. Combine that with using the lick function to tether you to an object, and you have some very interesting results. You have the option to ragdoll the goat, or basically make the goat collapse at any time, and quite disturbingly, you can still move the goat around using the very standard PC WASD controls. This makes the goat roll very disturbingly on the ground with limbs flailing all over the place. Goat Simulator has launched with a number of bugs and isn't very well optimized. I found that there was quite a bit of chugging whenever I tried to change camera angles too quickly. And this is on a machine that ran Bioshock Infinite and its subsequent DLCs quite easily. The developer has also stated quite clearly that they know there are plenty of bugs and they only intend to fix the ones that break the game, like cause crashes. They consider most of the other bugs funny enough to leave within the game. So how does Goat Simulator stack up? Well, essentially, it's a fun diversion. Playing it, you will certainly get plenty of laughs, especially since most activities you do come with some sort of title or trophy, I guess you could say. But how long this game lasts you will really depend on how long you can keep that amusement factor going. There are some very funny moments. I almost had tears coming out of my eyes at times. Let's just say that if you unlock the Michael Bay achievement, you'll know exactly what I mean. But after about 20, 25 minutes, it was starting to drain. This certainly isn't a game that you can spend several hours on without probably having some sort of mental damage from it. And I believe the developer also realizes this themselves. To quote them directly from their website, Goat Simulator is a small, broken, and stupid game. It was made in a couple of weeks, so don't expect a game in the size and scope of GTA with goats. In fact, you're better off not expecting anything at all, actually. To be completely honest, it would be best if you spent your $10 on a hula hoop, a pile of bricks, or maybe a real-life goat. So when you have the developers themselves saying that, I guess you should probably take notice of it. If you're after just a silly, strange experience, then Goat Simulator certainly fits that bill. If you're after a more satisfying gaming experience, you'd probably be better off not getting this or waiting for it to turn up on a $2 sale, or inevitably it will probably show up in a Humble Bundle at some point in the future. So I think the only way I can sum this up is to say...
With Easter about a week away, I thought now's the time to start thinking about some of the movies you're going to watch over the Easter long weekend. Every seasonal holiday has a movie genre. Easter has always been a bit harder. We have a limited selection whether you want a full Easter experience or just a reminder of rabbits and chocolate eggs. Now with these Easter films, they usually fit into two categories. First, those based around the actual event of Easter where it actually impacts on the plot. And then another, some where it just plays incidentally in the movie. Like a movie like Mallrats, for example, which is set on Easter weekend, and you do see an Easter bunny at the shopping mall.
Bye-bye, Easter bunny.
There is no Easter bunny!
In the 1970s, the Rankin-Bass animated movies were really the first for children, and this spoke of the basis of Easter and where the Easter bunny actually came from. With other movies, it needs only feature a rabbit. I've known of people that have referred to me Watership Down from the 70s, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Donnie Darko, even Harvey with Jimmy Stewart from the 50s. But in this case, does that mean Alice in Wonderland applies? It is kind of hard to work it out. With Easter Parade from the early 40s, the references to Easter aren't too often, however, it builds to the titular parade, which makes the wait all the more worthwhile. You might also want to check out Bing Crosby and Holiday Inn, as Easter is also touched on. If you want to go a bit of a scriptural angle, there is Jesus Christ Superstar from 1973, the big screen pre-MTV adaptation of the Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice rock opera. But moving on from the Rankin Bass animated features of the 70s, no one had really looked at doing more Easter movies for kids. Until 2011, when along came a movie called Hop.
You're about to be crowned the Easter Bunny.
Look, Dad, I want to drum in a band. I want to see the world.
Now, unfortunately, Hop got really bad reviews, and these reviews said nothing can save it, which really puts a damper on the genre of the Easter movie even really continuing. A lot of these Easter movies have made their way as direct-to-video family films. I shudder at the thought of Baby Huey's Great Easter Adventure. I doubt there really is anything great about it. I checked out the trailer and, whew, I think it's more something that's going to scare the kids than make them excited about Easter. For fans of darker films, I recommend checking out Donnie Darko. And watch for the release of the new film Night Before Easter, which is an upcoming horror film scheduled for release this month. If you're looking for my opinion on what are the best movies to watch over the Easter long weekend, I definitely recommend Jesus Christ Superstar from 1973 and Easter Parade from 1942, starring those impeccable stars Fred Astaire and Judy Garland. I'm sure a lot of these movies mentioned will also isolate a lot of people. There really isn't that much selection out there for your Easter viewing. Regardless, happy Easter.
Who are you here to see?
I'm here to see your butt.
Oh my gosh!
Pow! Wham! First try!
The Lego Movie follows the adventures of Emmett, played by Chris Pratt, an ordinary Lego construction worker whose job is to rebuild the world according to President Business's, played by Will Ferrell's, specifications. He spends his life following the rules and following the instructions.
Yes! Overpriced coffee.
That's $37.
Awesome!
This changes when he accidentally discovers the legendary Piece of Resistance and is met by another character named Wildstyle, played by Elizabeth Banks, who informs him that he is in fact the Special, and it's going to be up to him to prevent Lord Business from making sure the Lego world never changes again.
And the prophecy states that you're the most important person in the universe. That's you, right?
Yes. That's me.
She takes him off to meet Vitruvius, voiced by Morgan Freeman, who is one of the great master builders. Lego characters who are able to see parts in the world and build things that don't need to follow instructions.
My fellow master builders.
Hello!
Lord Business plans to end the world as we know it.
And first up, the Lego Movie is very impressive in the way that it actually captures the essence of Lego. This world has been built that follows essentially Lego rules. Everyone walks around without bending their knees, and the animation in this movie just makes you think Lego most of the way through it. It's an amazing achievement, and from a technical point, it really is. Well, it's just plain impressive. The main cast all perform their roles excellently. Will Ferrell as President / Lord Business is an absolute master. He is in his element. And the main characters already mentioned get joined by Lego Batman, voiced by Will Arnett.
We'll wing it. It's a bad pun.
And Bad Cop, Good Cop, a character voiced by Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson is great since his voicing of the cop character includes his tough, hard guy, Taken persona, combined with this super friendly, easygoing, light-hearted side.
Take him to the melding chamber.
Isn't there supposed to also be a good cop?
Hi, buddy. Would you like a glass of water?
Yeah, actually.
Too bad.
And it's wonderful to hear Liam Neeson actually doing something other than the tough guy, even though the tough guy does dominate this particular character. So really, all round, the performances are very, very, very excellent. Now, being a kids' movie, there are some elements where, watching as an adult, I started to think, well, this could certainly get annoying. The surprising thing is, even these annoying things like the song that will be stuck in your head for days, turns out to be a major part of the film, and you can't help but liking it. Another character that turns up further down the track is a very strange creation by the name of Unikitty, played by Alison Brie. She seems to be like almost a Lego My Little Pony. And when she turns up, her bright, breezy voice and her entire persona just screams, my God, this character is going to annoy the you-know-what out of us. But before too long, much like the rest of this movie, you get to see another side, and there's quite a few surprising developments. And Unikitty ends up being a very strong character and a very important part of this movie. If there's one thing this movie does excel at, it is surprising you.
Where am I?
Come with me if you want to not die.
Now, considering this was released back on February 7th overseas and has taken basically 2 months to reach Australian shores, despite being largely produced and made in Australia, it's been hard to avoid hearing too much about it. I was aware that it was a surprising movie and that what you expected isn't what you got. I'm happy to say that even going into the cinema knowing that, I was still surprised with where this movie went. What could have been a shameless advertisement for Lego actually turns into a movie with a lot of heart. And when the big reveal happens, well, let's just say I started tearing up. I'm not ashamed to admit it. This movie goes to wonderful places and gives you wonderful experiences. It is very, very hard to actually find any major criticism of this. There are some segments that seem to go just a bit too long, and there are so many just one-off gag characters that you might like to see more of. But even with that, again, it's very hard to fault. I'm happy to say that the Lego Movie is a true family movie. It will delight young and old together. And even the jokes that the adults will get more than the kids don't rely on innuendo or, you know, like a little wink wink, nudge nudge, the kids don't know about this sort of stuff yet. Plus, the movie is full of just incredible spectacles. This is one that is more than worth going to the movies to see, because on the big screen, it is fantastically impressive. So if you'd like to see a very funny kids movie that has a lot of heart and that the adults can enjoy too, then see the Lego Movie. It's magic. Everything is
awesome. Oh my gosh, I love this song.
Our first guests actually blur the line between movie news and local wildlife, so I've had to bend the rules slightly to take it into account. But you know what? It's my podcast, and that's how I roll. It's also rather interesting that, in a way, both Christian and myself are also special guests on our own podcast. Just think about that for a second. So anyway, let's hear from our first lot of guests.
It's the musical extravaganza that launches the 80s. It's Alan Carr's Can't Stop the Music.
So here we are with the gang that's going to be bringing the village people to life at Redcliffe Entertainment Centre on the 24th of April. So I thought I'd start with just everyone introducing themselves.
I'm Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt.
I'm playing the construction worker.
Hi, I'm Blake.
Hi, Blake.
Hi, Blake.
I'm playing the cowboy.
So, continue on.
I'm Christian. I'll be playing the Indian and I'll do the voice. Yeah, that sounds good.
I'm Willem and I'm obviously the biker.
And believe it or not, I'm going to be the cop. Yay. So, being such a interesting movie about a very, very famous band, I just thought I'd ask the guys, what does the Village People mean to you?
Well, Village People hails back from my first introduction to stage, actually, and when for my Australian Rules football team, under sevens, on stage at our end of year function doing Macho Man. Real, so quite fitting, I believe.
Blake?
I haven't had much experience with the Village People. Apparently.
Christian, just run away.
Sorry.
Right, I'll start again.
Okay, I've gone to get my Village People albums.
I haven't had much experience with the Village People throughout my time, but basically the Village People to me is just musical Halloween.
Yeah. Christian. So I'm agreeing. So yeah. No, to me the Village People is very much representative of the late 70s disco, which of course is the era that it came out. So to me they represent the late 70s going into the 80s and that awkward transition from disco to, oh, what's happening next?
To me the Village People is love. The Village People is life.
Deep.
It would be great if this was a visual podcast. And to me, The Village People reminds me of a time when I realised that the world was a lot more complicated and fabulous than I originally thought.
Boy? Oh boy.
So for our redeeming features tonight, I thought a really good choice would be Can't Stop the Music, since I've got the guys available for me. And they're so available.
Hey, don't take that out of context.
Can't stop the music.
So here we have the guys recreating The Village People telling us some redeeming features of the Can't Stop the Music movie.
You can't stop the glamour.
Matt. Oh, it has to be the opening scene with Steve Guttenberg on roller skates. I mean, for me, that actually takes me back to Cliff Richard and Wired for Sound, the film clip. It's just, yeah, awesome.
And I particularly like how he celebrated New York's garbage collectors during that scene.
Definitely.
I've never seen someone have so much fun roller skating around New York with miming to a song that I don't think they were actually rhyming to the right song.
Exactly. You'd all the way down Broadway.
Yeah. You'd never hang out with me on a weekend.
Without being run over by taxi drivers.
Steve Guttenberg, known for the Police Academy movie, stuff that. He should be known for this.
Absolutely.
You can't stop the excitement.
Blake.
I think the most redeeming feature about the movie is the fact they seamlessly worked the Village People costumes into the movie. You didn't even know they were there most of the time.
It seemed really normal to have an Indian and a construction worker just walking down the street.
Indians and cowboys have always been best friends.
Well, at least when the cop turned up, he turned up as a cop.
Writing a musical ticket.
And then he proceeds to like give him the ticket and during the song, I'm not interested in this. And so you start singing, oh, I bet the cops.
What ends up happening, the lady ends up like stealing his bike or something, I can't remember.
An old lady on a moped or
that's
something.
That's right. Is this after she's hit everybody with a loaf of bread?
It's a different old lady, I think. Weird old lady.
Well, that's the thing. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, aside from The Village People and I suppose, what's her name, Valerie Perrin, who plays the lead role, pretty much the rest of the cast are just these older people that we really have no idea where they fit in with the rest
they
of the
just
movie.
Misbehave in the backgrounds.
Yeah.
You can't stop the dancing.
Well, so probably to me the redeeming feature would be the fact that if you're looking back at it as a disco movie, it really is the most iconic and the most of its time. You know, you look back at the fashion and some of the stuff they're doing and gasp. Hey, I know some of the straightest people who grew up watching that movie and said, we just thought it was really cool. So to me the redeeming feature would be the fact that it definitely is of its time and is the ultimate, one of the ultimate disco movies. And the fact that it was originally going to be called Disco Land, where the music never ends. Oh, we'll change the name, just make it You Can't Stop the Music.
I think that's a good redeeming feature.
Whether you try to stop it or not, it's not going to happen. Even if you unplug it.
You can't stop the laughter.
I think the one redeeming feature about this film is Steve Guttenberg.
Even if he doesn't want to be interviewed about it anymore.
But most of all, you can't stop the music.
And, I mean, really, I think a great redeeming feature is that it's a movie that contains skinny dipping, complete with booby shots, and a quick cock shot as well, in a PG-rated movie.
Which is interesting, sure. Because YMCA would probably be, you know, if you were to pick one song out of, you know, well, their whole discography, you know, YMCA is what they're known best for, and that's a scene that pretty much will then appeal to all audiences, really, straight, gay, otherwise, or people that are more just fond of glitter. I don't know.
Complete with wang and boobies.
Exactly. Excellent. And don't bother rewinding because, yeah.
If you blink, you miss it, and you're not missing much.
That's. You don't have to put this in.
That's a matter of perception.
You don't have to put this in the recording, but I know a few gay guys who have told me that part in their video was always a. Didn't quite work very well because they'd pause it so many times.
I'm not taking that out.
And it wasn't me, I promise. I never had the video.
And thus DVDs were invented.
Absolutely.
And this hasn't been released on Blu-ray. Gee, I wonder why.
It seems like a very much a missed opportunity.
Well, I think it should be on Pink Ray, though, if they did it.
Yeah. We need the high definition for it so it can zoom up.
Digitally. Oh. Fast and wang.
the 8K. Okay, well, fantastic. Thanks, guys, for letting me do this on our rehearsal night. And it's going to be quite an amazing night. So definitely, and I'm sure everybody agrees with me, head to the Redcliffe Entertainment Centre on the 24th of April. It's all for Variety Queensland, for charity. Yeah. I can't think of a better reason to have to sit through this movie.
Exactly. and another excuse to do the YMCA on a weeknight, possibly.
Next day of public holiday.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Excellent. Thanks very much, guys.
Yay, thank you. Can't stop the music.
Trust me, we've tried.
Once it begins, you can't stop the music.
Local wildlife. Okay, so today on the podcast, we have got an absolutely amazing couple of people who have joined us. I did mention them briefly in the last episode when I talked about the Super Mario Brothers movie, and the guys that are putting together a comic book sequel to that movie. I really feel like I didn't do them justice, so today I'm very happy to welcome Stephen Applebaum and Eric Donovan to the podcast. Thanks for talking to the Rufus Project, guys.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
I suppose to start, just tell me a bit about yourselves and what you normally do.
Well, I actually work in a restaurant in the kitchen. You know, I've been doing that since high school, where I'm comfortable. You know, got a lot of work done there, but this is more of a passion project and a hobby is writing and just research. And I've done a lot for excavating these supposed cult classics and helping people appreciate them in a new era. So ideally, that's what I would want my future career to be, is something involving film.
Fantastic. And Eric?
Yeah. I draw, actually. That is what I do with my time. I graduated from the Savannah College of Art and Design last year, in the spring, 2013, with a degree in sequential art, which is basically a fancy word for comics. So I studied there in a four-year program, and soon afterwards, I got an email from Steven, and he asked me if I was interested in doing the Super Mario project, and I said, sure, absolutely. It sounded awesome. So I'm doing that, and I'm also working on a comic project for Thrillbent Entertainment called The House in the Wall, which should be coming out over the summer.
Nice, nice. I've checked out your DeviantArt page. It's very impressive.
Sorry, what?
I checked out your DeviantArt page. It was very impressive.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Excellent, excellent. Now, unfortunately, Ryan couldn't join us thanks to the logistics of scheduling and international time zones. Is there anything you can let me know about Ryan?
Well, Ryan lives in Tennessee and North Carolina. He divides his time between the two states, and he works in video game development. He does the special effects, like, I believe, fire, lightning, you know, just general effects like that. And from when we talk, it seems like he has a lot of overtime. He works like 10, 11-hour shifts every day just to get these games out.
Right. I have heard that's a very, very hectic career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay, thanks for that. Okay, well, let's move on to the task at hand. And I just really want to know, so why a comic book sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Well, you know, it just feels like a comic book medium. There are a lot of elements of the film that translate perfectly to the format. You have these crazy dinosaurs and all these plants and, like, this skyline with smoggy orangeness and no sun. It just really works in a comic book format with the right artist, and we felt that it was our best chance of continuing the story quickest way possible.
Excellent. Do you have anything to add to that, Eric? Or?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. When he first approached me, I mean, I had seen the movie, but I hadn't initially thought of it being a sequel. But when he approached me and showed me the script and kind of talked about his vision for it, I really saw it and I thought, wow, yeah, absolutely, this would work as a comic. I mean, part of what makes comics so cool is the fact that you can do anything with them, in the same way that you can with film. But with film, if you want to do crazy monsters and special effects and cities and dinosaurs and plants and all these different things, it's a massive budget. But with a comic, you can get a good artist, haha, little for myself, but you know, you get someone who can draw these things, and I mean, sure, you know, you have to, you know, have a budget for it or whatever, but compared to like a movie, you're talking about significantly less people involved, and you can also, you know, play around with things a lot in ways that you might not even be able to with a film. So yeah, definitely, I think it works as a comic.
It's been 20 years since the original movie, so why do you think that this movie still has such a following two decades down the track?
Well, you know, it's Super Mario Brothers. It's the biggest game franchise ever made, and despite what a lot of people think, it's still going very strongly. It's still an iconic character and an iconic setting. For the people who had seen the film in the mid-90s, it sort of occupies this weird zone where it's a childhood favorite, but it's also something that they don't like because they're adults. They don't know how to see it. So when they do revisit it, it's just this experience. And we thought a comic book would be a great way to expand on that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had so many people tell me since I started, like, wow, yeah, I love that movie. That movie was so cool when I was little. And unfortunately, I didn't see it when I was younger. I saw it in my teens, just because I never went to the cinema a lot when I was a kid. But, you know, it's one of those movies that has, like he said, that very kind of nostalgic feel. Like, you think back when you were a kid, and there's lots of people who are still really big fans of that film and are really excited to see it continue in a comic. I mean, our message boards on the comic site, week after week, have these people who know these, you know, intricate details about the stories and the characters that I even sometimes don't know about. I'm like, oh, whoa, that's crazy. This guy knows that. And they're guessing what comes next, and it's really cool.
Now, I do need to ask this, because given the murkiness of copyright law around the world, do you have any concerns with using these existing characters and likenesses within the comic book?
Well, Nintendo obviously owns the rights to the base characters, but the interpretations are so original that they are owned by Leitmotiv, the original production company, and we are in touch with Roland Joffe, the director of the film. The producer. And, you know, he's very for the comic. He has talked to us extensively about wanting to do an actual film sequel, but obviously, you know, that can't happen. The rights expire to making an actual film. So he's like, you know, go forward with this comic. I think it's a great idea. I'd love to see what you can do. So technically, we can only do a comic book sequel. If a film version were made, you know, that would have to go through Nintendo again and whoever they license the rights to.
What are the future plans for the Plumbers from Brooklyn?
You know, Ryan and I have been writing this script for years, since 2010, and we only really started back in, you know, last year. So we have a lot of adventures planned ahead. This particular part, we're envisioning it as a three-part adventure, sort of a cohesive trilogy. So the first part will be 10 chapters, and we're only just now starting the third. So I suppose that gives you an idea of how far ahead we're planning.
I'm looking forward to the third chapter. I am up to date with the comic online, so I'm very eager to find out what happens next.
Awesome.
I think it's funny that Eric hasn't seen the future chapters, so he doesn't even know what's going to happen. Every week we send him a new script page and, you know, just draw it, and he doesn't know what's coming next.
No, mysterious.
Yeah, sometimes that works well, and then other times, you know, I might do something with the character, not realizing about something down the line, and then there's a little, oh, okay. You know, we kind of figure that out as it goes, which is kind of funny when that happens. But it's, yeah, it's still really exciting. I mean, I still get the whole chapter ahead of time. So I get to see all the pages that I'm going to be doing in the chapter, and we can kind of discuss, you know, maybe how things are working on which page-to-page transitions, or I'll do all the layouts for the pages ahead of time so we can see how the chapter's going to flow together, and we can kind of make any edits or decisions there. And then when we get to the page, we go through that process again.
So if people want to check out the comic or check out what you're doing, well, here's your chance to give it a nice big plug. Where should they look?
Well, the website is currently hosted at smdthecomics.com. It's, you know, a simple site, Discus, WordPress. You know, we have the first 25 pages of the first chapter up, and then the 12 pages of the second chapter. And we should be starting the third chapter later this week.
Yep. Just finished the inks for the first page today. So we're going to be coloring that and getting our lettered and everything.
Yeah. I woke up to do this interview, and I checked my email as I usually do whenever I wake up. And there was it was from Eric. I'm like, oh, time to check this out and see what he did wrong. So...
It's always trolling, man.
Yeah. So I looked at it, and, you know, ink came out very well. It's hard to tell with the pencil sometimes because you don't know how the blacks are going to work against the lighted areas and all that. But when the inks finally come over, it just works out really well. You can see this different balance and all these great characters and background elements. And now that we're in a park setting with all this foliage, it's going to be a really great setting to see all these details, give Eric a chance to explore more ideas.
Yeah,
I'm certainly looking forward to seeing a bit more of Dino Hatton's new park.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm having a great time drawing it, so I think people are really going to enjoy seeing the scenes and reading the story.
I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it.
Awesome.
Yep. And now, anything else you'd like to add before we finish up?
Well, thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Did you want to know anything about the future story?
I mean, do you want to let go some spoilers now, or save the mystery for the website?
Yeah, let's give a couple spoilers.
Oh, exclusive.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, people wouldn't want to listen to the podcast and not get any idea of what's to come. You can't just say, oh, you'll have to read on. That's a bit of a cop-out. Well, if anyone who's read through the first chapter knows, we introduce a new villain in the final pages. So that sort of sets up what comes later on in the story. And this current chapter is where we restart the narrative. We introduce all the elements that are going to come together and develop the plot for the sequel. So the villain's pretty obvious if you know our inspirations. We're drawing a lot from Super Mario Brothers 2, and I don't think it's any bit of a spoiler to say it's Wart. A lot of people are concerned with how do you follow up Koopa, or, you know, in the games it's Bowser, he's the main villain. How do you follow that up? People just aren't familiar with Wart. He's only been in one game. So we've done a lot to flesh out the character and give him a backstory that fits both this universe, but sort of ties into what you would expect from the video games. So everything you see in this current chapter, chapter 3, is hinting at everything we're going to do later on. For the whole theme of the sequel is ecology. Lots of plants, of vegetation and how the world is dying and hopefully going to be restarted. And Wart ties into that. Does Wart want to save the world, or does Wart want to destroy it? There's a lot of different motivations behind that, and it's not going to be clear until the very final chapters.
Awesome. Any final thoughts, Eric?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to all the readers and fans. I've had a lot of people on my DeviantArt and Twitter, and I really appreciate it. I mean, I'm glad that people are enjoying reading it and spending their time every week to come and look at the pictures I've drawn and the words that Stephen and Ryan have read. So, yeah, that's about it.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's been a great experience having all these fans come together and appreciate everything we're doing. I don't think it would be possible without Eric's artwork. He just has this style that translates perfectly to that world.
Nice. Okay, well, I better let you get back to it so I can read the next page sooner rather than later.
Awesome.
And look, thanks for talking to the Rufus Project. Much appreciated.
All right, thank you, Trevor.
Thanks a lot.
I'm really excited to have a look at some of my upcoming events, which may be of interest to our listeners here. Now, as we've mentioned in previous podcasts, the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters will be taking place on Thursday, the 17th of April, at the Chanel Theatre at UQ. With the recent passing of Harold Ramis and the 30th anniversary of the movie, we thought this was quite fitting to screen this movie. We have a pre-show with the Queensland Ghostbusters franchise. Now, these guys are a lot of fun, and we'll be doing a lot of antics before the movie, so we definitely recommend you to come along from 6:30. Tickets are available at the door for $10 per person, and this may be the only chance you'll see for the 30th anniversary Ghostbusters on the big screen. A bit of a leap ahead to the May program to have a bit of a sneak peek at what's on offer at some of my pop-up screenings. On Wednesday, the 7th of May, we have Jing Chat Goosey, aka Police Story, one of the early films starring and directed by Jackie Chan. So if you're in for a bit of a kung fu night, drink in hand, head along to Room 60 at Kelvin Grove Urban Village, where you can enjoy this drink in hand and some of your best mates. Tickets are $5, or $10 includes your first drink free. I'm screening there at 6:30 p.m. on the first Wednesday of the month, so head to room60.com.au for full details about the upcoming screenings. A couple of weeks later, my next pop-up night at Lock and Load Bistro, which is located on 142 Boundary Street, West End. We have the 1975 drive-in classic The Giant Spider Invasion by Bill Rebane, apparently one of the highest-grossing films of 1975. And the version we'll be screening has come straight from the director himself, so it is the director's cut, which I suppose if people are a fan of B-grade films or trash cinema, you may not have seen The Giant Spider Invasion like this before. So on Wednesday, the 21st of May, at Lock and Load Bistro, The Giant Spider Invasion at 7 p.m. Come along for some trashy 70s B-grade goodness. For more details about my upcoming events, please check out christianfletcher.com, that's Christian with a K-R, and on Facebook, Christian Fletcher.
It's competition time, and time is running out to win one of these great prizes. So I'll start with the most urgent. We have a double pass to the 30th anniversary screening of Ghostbusters at the Chanel Cinema at St. Lucia on the 17th of April. Time is running out. We have to give this away, and we have to give this away very, very soon. If you want to win this, just leave a comment with the word Ghostbusters, either in the Podomatic comments, the YouTube comments, on Twitter, or on our Facebook page. Whichever one you frequent in order to keep an eye on what we're doing, just leave it right there. We're leaving this open right to the last minute because we're happy to hold the tickets for you at the door. Can't make it to the Chanel Cinema because you can't make it that night or you don't live anywhere near Brisbane. Well, we also have a competition that goes a bit wider and is really available for anyone, anywhere. So what we have here is a classic indie game pack, redeemable on Steam. This pack includes the fantastic Cave Story Plus, as well as the classics World of Goo, Anomaly, Osmos, and Edge. Now, if you haven't played any of these games, they are absolutely fantastic, and are a great showcase of the fantastic indie game talent that is out there. So if you'd like to win this game pack, simply leave the comment game, again, in the preferred medium of your choice, be that the Podomatic comments, YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook. We do not intend to spam anyone, and it's your choice as to whether or not you want us to mention you on the podcast if you win. So please enter, and let us give you stuff. Thanks for listening to the Rufus Project. If you want to find out anything more about stuff that we've talked about, there are links galore in the description of this podcast below. You can also head to our YouTube channel, where we'll have a playlist of bonus features, so things like movie trailers and other related videos that link back to the stuff that we have discussed in this very podcast. While you're there, you can also check out the bonus features from the previous two, and you'll just generally have a good time, you know? YouTube, it's fun when it's not blocking your closing song. I'm not bitter, honestly. While you're frequenting the YouTube channel, or even on the Podomatic comments, or if you happen to jump onto Twitter or Facebook at some point, we'd also love for you to leave a comment for us, whether you enjoyed the show, what you think we might be able to do better, or something that you would like us to talk about. We are particularly interested in also talking to local talent from anywhere in the world. Christian and I certainly do very much hope that you enjoyed this podcast, and if you did, then the next one will be up in a fortnight's time. So farewell from the Rufus Project. Please enjoy our now hopefully YouTube-friendly closing music, and, well, I couldn't think of any suitable witty sign-out for this, so feel free to add your own. See you next time.